Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories. Hello and welcome to this episode of the On Air podcast. We hope you have had a good few weeks. We accidentally took a break due to some minor technical difficulties. Also, some of it was an intentional break because it's summer and no one's doing anything. So it was an extended actual break. But we are back with a selection of light bites for you because lots of little things have happened. So it's a light bite special. It's a mezze plate.
Ooh.
Of topics. I'm not entirely sure what mezze is.
No, me neither, but it sounds good.
Sounds like it should be this. We're doing a royal mezze. And we thought we would start with a topic that we always enjoy, which is the Thai royal family and the accidental succession crises they're going through.
I would recommend people go and listen to episode 52, which is where we talked about this in much more detail. I will give like a summary. Let's see if I can do this well, because I'm not very good at summarising things. In short, the succession crisis in Thailand so far. So in Thailand, the king can name a successor. There is a line of succession that's sort of stipulated by the house law, but that is only something that they fall back on if the king doesn't name his heir, just so that there's not complete chaos and, you know, coups and all sorts. The king has 7 children, 5 sons and 2 daughters. 4 of his sons were exiled when he divorced their mum. Casual, just a normal thing to do.
As you do.
One of his daughters is in her 30s, hasn't been prepared for the job of being monarch in any way whatsoever, and just seems to like floating about riding horses and designing clothes. So is not generally seen as being somebody who's being prepared for the job. So that leaves 2 children. He has a son, I think it's Dipankon, I think that's how you pronounce it, who has, it's believed to be autism, but some kind of developmental challenge. And as I said last time, autism doesn't necessarily prevent you from being a monarch, but his particular presentation is believed to make it so that it would be very difficult for him to be able to do the job of monarch on his own. And so what everyone believed, and this is, it, you know, it's difficult with Thailand because everything's very shadowy and secret, but what everybody believed was going to happen was that either he would become king and he would have a regent, or that somebody else would just become monarch. And the person who was being prepared instead was the king's other remaining child, Bajrakitiyappa, his eldest daughter. So people thought she would either take over as queen outright, or if Thailand was afraid of women, she would just become the regent and do the actual job, and Dipankon would be the actual king in name. But then in January, Bajrakitiyappa collapsed suddenly, very inconveniently. And she was taken to hospital. They tried their best. And again, it's shadowy and secret, so they're not really telling us anything. They haven't told us anything since January, basically. But well-placed sources have suggested that she is being kept alive by machines in hospital. The palace are hiding it, but she is essentially medically dead. So that causes a massive issue, because the only other person who's really available is probably unfit for the job. So it's kind of, there's been a vacuum in Thailand since January, pretty much, that nobody has really addressed. So yeah, is that a good summary? Did I summarize that well?
I think that's a great summary.
That's sort of the situation up till now. So yeah, there were lots of theories and things about what Thailand could do and what they might do. So over the past week, one of the 4 exiled children, the 2nd oldest son, so I think it's Phacharason.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay, great. Well, that's what we'll go with. But if it's not right, I'm sorry to Thailand. But he is one of the exiled sons. He's the 2nd oldest. And he went to Thailand.
Plot twist.
Yeah, so the oldest son of the exiled children is married to an American. So he's not eligible, because in the Thai line of succession, if you marry a foreigner, you're not eligible to succeed the throne. I mean, they could change that because they change stuff all the time. But he's also not interested, apparently. But the 2nd son is a lawyer. He's married to a Thai woman. He sent a lot of signals and interviews and things that he would be open to it.
Yeah, so Vacherason, he was banished from Thailand sort of alongside his mother in the 90s, in 1996. And he wasn't even in Thailand when he was banished because he was at school in the UK. So he hasn't been to Thailand for a very long time. When we found out that the sort of there had been this kind of gap opening in the succession crisis, in the succession of Thailand, he was the most, in one way, he was the most likely like alternate candidate because he is a son of the king. He is very pro the Thai monarchy in Thailand and very sort of promotes Thailand abroad. But also he had been banished and the king was like, "No, who? I what? Children? Don't know these people." So it was like when he turned up, I was like, "Oh, of course it's him." And I was like, "Oh, it's actually him in Thailand, like rocking up, on a normal airplane, just casually." But I think it definitely looked like he was kind of going in and like exploring Thailand as both someone who's not been to Thailand ever or since they were a tiny child, and also someone who was like, "And I can be a royal. Look at me doing royal things."
Some people might say, well, you're overreacting because it's basically just a man going to Thailand, and that's lots of people do that every year, and that's not that really that big of a deal. But I think partly because of this sort of secrecy around the Thai monarchy, I can't even in the British royal family, I think if somebody was on a machine being kept alive in a hospital for 6 months or 7 months, they would probably tell us at some point in that 7 months.
Yeah, eventually.
They're not known for being transparent about health, but I actually think that it is very much a statement that that he is being groomed to be prepared in some way. And this is sort of the first step of that. And the reason that I think that there's a couple of reasons. Firstly, is I don't think that he would be allowed into Thailand without the king's approval.
Yeah, that's kind of like the main point of being exiled, is that you don't get to come back.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point of it. So that's one reason. The other reason is, he did do some touristy things. He went around and looked at some stuff in Thailand, and I think essentially connecting with Thailand again, trying because he hasn't been there for a long time, and obviously is disconnected in a way because he grew up in the UK and the US. But also, there was a sort of a few days of the visit where which was really a royal engagement, multiple royal engagements. There was a press junket there, which doesn't really happen when you're just a normal tourist going to Thailand, I believe. And then he amongst the things that he did, he visited the most senior religious figure in Thailand, who is personally appointed by the king. So it would be like somebody, I don't know, coming to the UK and going to visit the Archbishop of Canterbury. Like that's probably not something that would happen without the monarch knowing about it and being okay with it. And he visited a childcare centre which is sponsored by the palace. Which again, I don't think he would be able to go and visit that place if he didn't have the approval. So I think, all of these different factors, and just watching it as an observer as well, like it was very clearly a royal visit. He was going around shaking hands with people. It was a royal visit. It absolutely was. And there is no doubt in my mind that this was a coordinated attempt. It wasn't just him going, I'm going to go to Thailand and I'm going to make it clear that I want to be back in the royal family. It was very obviously to me the royal family having some involvement. They might not say it at this point, but having some involvement in starting the rehabilitation of bringing him back into the family.
Yeah, it was definitely, the royalness of it was, very evident, and the sort of the amount of press that were there, like the fact we knew about it was really sort of key because, as you said, like the Thai royal family are very shadowy. We don't really know what the Thai king does on a day-to-day basis,
Yeah, same thing in Germany.
and his son, was there and he was doing the kind of thing that you would expect a royal to do, but he also wasn't doing it sort of massive public events. So it's a very like gentle easing in, like, "Look, here he is, he's gone again." And then I can only assume in a few months I'll be like, "Guess he's back, he's gone again." And I'll just build it up because I think not only has he kind of got to almost like win over his family and fit in that role. This was the man that exiled him and hasn't spoken to him for 27 years, probably. But also, like the Thai people who have had, have got what they assumed was their line of succession. And now this essentially American Tyman is coming over to be their king, possibly.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was it's that plausible deniability, isn't it? That like if he'd come over and everyone had booed him and thrown things at him in the street, the palace could have said, "Oh, well, you know, we didn't know he was coming back. This was nothing to do with us. We had no involvement in it." They've carefully done it so that the king is not there and sort of physically, you know, giving his son a hug and welcoming him back into Thailand. They can say, "Oh, this was nothing to do with us. This was just a guy who," or, you know, even they can make it so that they look good in this and like, yeah, we allowed him to come back, but we didn't have any involvement in it. He did all of this himself and he's trying to take the throne and well, you know, they can spin it any way they want, really, because they are at enough of a distance and we know that they like spin and changing the narrative. So they've got that. But if it works, they can say, oh no, we were gradually welcoming him back into the fold. And we're so glad that you like him. He's just so charismatic. And you know, it's for Thailand, it's a clever approach, I think.
Yeah, it's such a clever approach because it allows, for them to be right no matter what happens. And it also sort of, gives them that permission, I think, with if it went wrong, for them to try again with someone else to be like,
Yeah.
well, we disowned this guy, but we never disowned this one, so guess he's the new one.
They can't keep burying their head in the sand, especially if it's true that Bajra Kitiapa's health is very, very bad and she is essentially dead. Like, this is not a situation that's going to go away. So they had to address it. And it was the fact that it hadn't been addressed, and this happened in January and it's now August and it hadn't been addressed yet. It was slightly concerning if you're a Thai monarchist, because it felt like the king was very much burying his head in the sand and not thinking about, you know, the practicalities of what was going to happen when he goes. He's in his 70s and is not believed to be, according to the various leaked diplomatic documents, is not believed to be in the best of health. So this is something that he really does need to consider sooner rather than later. And also, I think, like, if the king hadn't reacted so rashly in the first place, his sons would still be in the line of succession. They didn't do anything wrong. I mean, their mother didn't really do anything wrong either. But you know, she was exiled, and if you want to blame her, that's fine. But, you know, if you look back at stuff from that time, he, like, originally he kept paying his son's tuition fees at school. They were in a fancy school in the UK. And then he cut them off and he was like, oh, well, they're ungrateful and they clearly don't want any connection to me. I was like, have you ever met a teenager? What teenager is not ungrateful and doesn't want a connection with their parents? Every teenager is like that.
Yeah, it's like that's just being
That's
normal.
just normal. So he hasn't really done anything that would disqualify him. So, you know, it's a smart choice to kind of bring him back in. And I think also just, I mean, again, it's difficult to tell in Thailand because you have all these protests, but you also have screaming monarchists literally lying on the ground in front of the king. So it's very difficult in Thailand to tell exactly what the public mood is. But just from the people who were there, he had a very, very, you know, popular response. People were cheering and really seemed excited to see him. So the royalist community clearly is already sold on the idea of him being the future monarch. He's not a bad choice either. Of course, it does come with risks. Firstly, for him, I'm sure he's followed the situation in Thailand, but I don't know if he necessarily understands what he's walking into. It's very Game of Thrones in Thailand. Like, there's whole factions who fight with each other for control. And, you know, allegedly, when the king's sister, this is all alleged, but when she said that she didn't like the way that he was promoting his mistress over his wife, the queen, broke her ankles. The king broke her ankles, allegedly. You are stepping in, he is stepping into a environment where he is putting himself at risk.
Quite a big risk, and he is married, so I always think like his wife is like, do you really want to be king, honey? Can we not just stay here?
Yes, it's definitely a risk for him. It's also a risk for the royals, I think. You know, obviously he seems very popular and he seems to have already been accepted by the monarchist crowd. And I hate using this word incorrectly, but I do think it's an appropriate use of the term. To pull it off will require a kind of nationwide gaslighting campaign. He was exiled. It was a big deal. He was cut off for a long, long time. And so I think that the king is going to have to do a kind of Oh, no, we didn't bring him back in because we're desperate and we don't have anybody else. And without him, the Thai monarchy would just be a puppet monarchy with my son who can't really do the job. We brought him back because I'm just a really nice guy. And suddenly, for no reason whatsoever, other than the goodness of my heart, decided to bring my son back in. And only that one son, not all the others who are not eligible to be in line to the throne. That's just coincidental that I haven't brought them back in. It's just, it's very obvious as an outsider what is happening, that they have no other choice and they're bringing him back in to sort of rehabilitate him with the goal of him being eventually monarch or regent. But he was exiled, he was removed from the line of succession. He had no contact with the king that we know of for decades. So it will require like a massive campaign of just, oh no, you misremembered all of that stuff that happened. And actually, we've been friends this whole time.
It's like, no, he wasn't exiled. He just didn't live here, and I never spoke to him. It's completely different. I think you're reading too much into this, guys. He's just far away. We've always been good friends.
Oh God. As I say, there's diehard monarchists in Thailand who literally worship the ground that the royals work on, walk on. But there are also growing protest movements. There's also a military who I think would be particularly happy to have a monarch who is just a puppet monarch that they can control. There's a we've talked in the Cones of Power episode, we talked about the kind of delicate balance between the monarchy and the military in Thailand and how they kind of prop each other up. But that could switch at any time. And I do think the military would quite like having somebody who is a king, but who has really no say over anything and they can control him. So it's risky because it could throw the balance of power off. It might, people might not endorse it, and it might be one step too far for people to kind of forget the fact that this guy was kicked out and lost his position and hasn't grown up in Thailand. He's grown up in the US, which is very different.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see the kind of when he comes back, if he comes back, what they do next, because he's already done the touristy things and he's done some kind of like very low level behind the scenes engagements almost. But, things like when is he going to be seen with his family? Is he going to be, when is he going to be seen with the king? Is what I want to know, really. Because that's the sign. Once he's seen with the king, then he's all but confirmed as the next heir. But that might take some time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that's the big question that's kind of left over from this is what can we expect to see now? And I do expect to see, because this one went quite well, I do expect to see more visits. If those continue to go well, maybe visits that bring him in closer proximity to the king. I could even see some sort of gushy reconciliation moment where they have like literally them hugging, shaking hands, doing some sort of reconciliation moment and making it a big thing. I could also see them just having him join stuff and not mentioning it and pretending like he's this is completely normal and there's not a big deal. But I do expect either way for it to gradually increase, him getting closer and closer to the royal family and to the king eventually. I don't expect an announcement about anything immediately. I think they are testing the waters. And also the king is notoriously fickle. And so there is always the risk that he'll bring his son in and then his son will do something he doesn't like in a few weeks and he'll go, nope, change my mind, don't like him anymore. He's exiled again. It's hard to know, but I do think that this is very clearly the first step in what they hope will solve this crisis by having him kind of step up. So our second of our sort of light bites for today is we're moving over to Denmark, something much more cheerful than a succession crisis, although less interesting because I do love a good succession crisis, you know me. And that is the recent announcement about the celebrations for Prince Christian's 18th birthday. So if you don't know, aka if you're my mother, Prince Christian is the grandson of the Queen of Denmark, Margrethe. He is the second in line to the throne after his father, Crown Prince Frederick, so eventually is expected to one day be King of Denmark. And his 18th birthday is on the 15th of October, and so they have finally announced what the plans are for his birthday. So very briefly, on his actual birthday, the 15th of October, as I mentioned, the royals are going to appear on the balcony of Frederick VIII's palace altogether, the whole royal family, and sort of wave at people and say hello and do what royals do on balconies. In that evening, there will be a gala dinner at Christiansborg Palace, which will include representatives from youth organisations from across Denmark. It will include young people who have made a mark in fields like sports and the arts and culture. And it will also include up to 200 18-year-olds chosen from the different municipalities of Denmark, as well as Greenland and the Faroe Islands, which are part of the Kingdom of Denmark. Each area can select up to two 18-year-olds who have made some sort of significant contribution to the local area to send to the gala. So that's what's going to happen on his actual birthday. And then on the 14th of November, he will attend a meeting of the Council of State, where he will make a solemn declaration to abide by the constitution. And then after that, he can act as sort of the temporary regent. So if the Queen and his father, for some reason, were both out of the country, he could step in and temporarily take the role of monarch, but he won't actually join the Council of State until he's heir. He's just kind of going along for a visit to read his little bit about, yes, I love the Constitution. Just a random observation is that I can never remember how old he is.
No, I thought he was like past 18. I think he's about 25.
25, yeah. He's one of those ones that because I don't pay much attention to him, like Estelle and Elizabeth and Amalia and Ingrid, I know they're how old they are roughly. Christian, if you told me he was 12, I'd believe it. If you told me he was 25, I'd believe it. I just, yeah. And I think, look, this is going to sound horrible to him. I think Christian seems like a lovely guy, lovely young man. And I will definitely be watching it, and I'm sure that it will be absolutely fantastic. But I just have to be honest that it is slightly less exciting to me because we do know for a fact that Christian is not going to be wearing his first tiara for his 18th birthday. So I immediately lose interest.
I personally think all royals should wear tiaras, and they should have a special 18th tiara wearing party.
Yes, I think he'd look great in tiara, and the Danish have some excellent tiaras that he could wear. So, I mean, yeah, I on a very shallow note, I am less interested in Christian's birthday through no fault of his own, just because I pay less attention to the boys anyway, and also because they're on a shallow note, there is not a chance of him wearing a tiara. So, you know, immediately less interesting to me. But that being said, based on what we've heard so far, I think it sounds like a good celebration. Sounds like a good idea. I think the main thing that's sort of notable is the invitations to lots of young people. Like there was a really heavy focus on this is a gala for young people, and young people are going to be in attendance, and there's loads of young people. And don't we love young people?
The young person's game now.
And I think it was Elizabeth, Princess Elizabeth in Belgium, who kicked off this trend. Because she's the oldest of her generation, I think. And when she turned 18, they invited 80 people from across Belgium who were born in the same year as her to attend her birthday celebrations. And I mean, that might have happened in previous generations, but I don't think that it did. And for her generation, anyway, I feel like Elizabeth is the one who went, this is what I'm going to do for my birthday. And then all of the young people who've turned 18 recently seem to have followed it, or a lot of them have. I mean, Amalia's birthday was impacted by COVID and things, but I know with Ingrid Alexandra, when she had her 18th birthday, she also invited young people from, or young people from across Norway were invited to a sort of reception thing that happened. Because, you know, it makes sense that it's not just him in a room with a bunch of old people, that you know, it's a room that's filled with young people and the future of Denmark. He's the future of Denmark, so they're the future of Denmark. And kind of, I guess it also engages young people early. So, like those young people who attend that gala are. They're building a connection with Christian because he's going to be their monarch and is around the same age as them. He's their peer. So I think it's, you know, it's a smart idea and clearly is tried and tested with other royal families, including ones that are a similar situation like Norway. So I think, you know, it's a smart idea to sort of bring the youth in.
I like to imagine that they were like, okay, and you're going to have a gala for your birthday, Christian. And he was like, I am not having old people at my gala. This is a young person's gala, and that's what we're doing. I like the fact that it's a mix of, like your young Danish celebrities who are, your sporting stars and your musicians. I don't know any Danish musicians, but I'm sure
No,
they
I was going to
exist.
name one, and then I was like, no, she is Swedish.
But also, you know, your average, your normal Dane, your everyday Danish person. Although I did quite like the whole like, oh, and yeah, they'll be chosen by that. I was like, how are they getting chosen? Is it like a ballot? Is it like a fight to the death and the winner gets to go? I need to know the choices.
In my organize, so my last job did get in invitations to various royal things, and they just had people express interest if they wanted to go, and then pulled names out of a hat.
I hope that's it. It was a big hat in Denmark, and they're
Yeah.
like, ooh, and today going is Sven. Well done, Sven.
It's like the Hunger Games, except no one dies, hopefully.
I've quite literally written the Hunger Games in my notes. So.
That's actually how they decide who goes to Frederick Skalar, is they just bring a bunch of young people together, they fight to the death, and whoever's left over is the representative for that municipality.
They're like, no one can complain now
Yeah.
because they're dead.
Yeah, no, but that's an, I think it's an interesting point. I always wonder that as well, of like, do they have to volunteer themselves? Because we never hear about it. Like, the coronation did the same thing where they say we'll invite representatives from different areas and we'll invite representatives from patronages. And it's like, okay, but how do they actually decide that? That's what I want to know. I want to know the practical, logistical, boring stuff.
I think about a lot of things. Like if, you know, a royal came to my school, I'm like, they wouldn't pick me, but I was like, I deserve to meet them.
Yeah.
They're not gonna pick me. I should be like, right, look, guys, I am the most deserving of this. You don't understand.
That's the problem with a thing out of a hat, approach to things, is that sometimes there are people who are more qualified to go and don't get to go. And I'm definitely not speaking from experience at the time when I didn't get to go to a garden party at Buckingham Palace and somebody else got to go who had, no involvement with anything. That's definitely not just me, I did get to go to the concert, but I wanted to go to a garden palace, and if I'd gone to the garden party, I would have actually met Kate and spoken to her. So rather than just
Oh,
smiled
I
at
would
her,
forever be bitter about that. I'd be like,
I know.
ugh.
I'm still bitter about it. I mean, I'm still bitter about, not getting head girl in secondary school. So, and that didn't impact my life in any way whatsoever. So I'm just a bitter person. Anyway, that's not the point. So I think that I think that that sort of bringing in the young people is a good approach. Kind of, it's tried and tested. It's not like breaking new ground or anything, and it sort of creates a good balance between the sort of reading the constitution stuff, which kind of has to happen, and is all of the formal procedural stuff, with something that's maybe a little bit more fun. I don't know if it's not the Hunger Games that we all get to watch on TV. That would be way more fun, but it is, it's a bit more light than reading the Constitution in a meeting with a bunch of politicians.
Yeah, I imagine that he's like, and can we not do the council today on my birthday? Please, please, please. So I don't want to. It's my birthday.
I do feel sorry for them to a certain degree, that like they always have to spend their big birthdays. I mean, Crown Princess Victoria spends every single birthday with somebody else. She's in the garden greeting people, and then she goes to a concert, and she always smiles and says it's so lovely that so many people want to come and celebrate her birthday. But sometimes I do wonder if like she ever wants just one year to stay in her pajamas.
I wonder if she's ever had a pajama day, where she's like,
Yeah.
nope, we're getting up, guys, we're getting dressed, come on.
Yeah, she just, I don't know why I like her sometimes, because she's definitely somebody who doesn't lie into her till 1 p.m. in her pajamas. I mean, I'm sure he'll have some other kind of celebration for his 18th as well, but his gift will be getting to read the Constitution, which is
Fun party.
it's not BMX. But I also, one of the other things I thought was that reading what's come out so far, it felt small.
I think I got to the end of the I read the bit about like the things happening on his birthday, and I was like, a balcony and a gala, like that's a great start for any royal's adult career. And then it was like, and then next day he's gonna do the Council of State, and I was like, okay, boring, but also probably the most important part. And then it was like, and that's it. I was like, but where's the running? Come on, Denmark, you're obsessed with running.
Exactly. I mean, I think, some of the comparisons that we could make, I think, maybe don't necessarily work because they are the heir to the throne, like Amalia and Elizabeth. So someone might argue, oh, well, their celebration was different because they're heir to the throne. And Amalia is also impacted by COVID. So we don't really know what she would have done if we hadn't had COVID. But even if you compare him to somebody like Ingrid, who is in Norway, so a neighbor, very similar culture, and she's in the same positions because she's the grandchild of the monarch. She's second in line rather than being the heir to the throne. Ingrid had two galas, one which was like a gala held by, was it the mayor or the prime minister or something? And one that was sort of white tie tiaras with her family and with other royals and things in attendance and with her friends at the palace. So she had two galas. She also did interviews. Amalia, even though she had COVID, she had a book written about her, a whole book where she did loads of interviews, like her own biography. And she's 18. What she accomplished at 18 that
Like
she's got a
just
biography.
exist.
But you know, they a biography with interviews about her. And so in comparison, it feels very small what we've got so far. And it's particularly surprising, I think, because Denmark is not a country that I would say is used to small birthday celebrations. Like we all remember Mary's 50th, which never ended.
Oh, that was still going on for like 5 years. Honestly, never known someone have such a long. I'm a big birthday person. I'm like, okay, it's my birthday month, so we have to do what I want. But I mean, I wasn't that excessive. I didn't go for like 3 year birthday celebration. I gave up eventually.
You should have, if you're following in Mary's footsteps. But she had like
Yeah.
multiple interviews with lots of different magazines. I think there was a book about her that came out with loads of photographs. It was mostly a sort of coffee table photo book sort of thing, but it did come out. An exhibition about her and about Crown Princesses that she went to open. She did a bunch of things with Frederick. I think the Royal Run was part of one of his birthday celebrations.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, so that's sort of like a
He
big.
had a royal run.
Yeah, that's if you don't know the Royal Run, it's a kind of a big annual race, I guess, a bit like a marathon, that loads of people across, like thousands and thousands of people across Denmark participate in every year, including the royal family. And it was launched in association with one of Frederick's birthdays, and has just, you know, ended up becoming an annual thing because it was so popular. And yeah, when I was reading through it, I was waiting for the interview or the exhibition or the visit to something else that was going to happen, you know, something going to be opened in his name or him taking on something more, because just because partly, you know, Ingrid had a little bit more for her birthday, but also because it's Denmark and they love a big birthday.
A lot of bizarre Christian articles this week, and I kept reading things like, and I'm sure some of the press were confusing him with his cousins because they were like the Danish prince who doesn't do royal duties, and it's like he's a child.
I saw that in the Daily Mail. They said that they referred to Christian as the one who renounced royal duties. And I was like, when did that happen?
That's news to me, guys.
Yeah.
But I was like, I mean, he's not obviously done that in any way, and he's only 18, but I also feel like if all of my fellow heirs had done this, and you know, it's not like Mary and Frederick aren't above, you know, having a massive celebration that's all about them, and you know, I'd be either Christian is like a shy, retiring wallflower who's like, nope, I don't want any focus on me. But it just seems, you know, a little bit odd. I mean, like Estelle's 10th birthday had more things. She had loads. She had like a portrait unveiling. Where's this portrait, guys? Come on.
I was just kind of left wondering if there are going to be more announcements. I mean, there will be more announcements, but if there's going to be more added to it, partly because of that, but partly just generally, what I've been left with is just questions. And like, none of them are that drastic. You know, this is not a massive scandal like the Thai situation we talked about earlier. This is just, I want to know these things and they're not telling me them yet. But like, will Christian give a speech at the gala? Because over in Norway, Ingrid and the king and both of her parents and everybody gave a speech. But we got to hear from Ingrid directly, and she gave a very funny speech. And I think it worked very well in her credit. That's a skill for her, is being able to give a speech. And she came across as really funny and likable. And so I think it helped to build her public persona by being able to give a speech. And again, the Danes love a good speech at a birthday party. So is Christian going to give a speech that's going to be televised at the gala? We don't know. We don't know if foreign royals are going to attend. So there was no mention of them in the gala, and there's no sort of separate white tie reception that we know about. So are we going to have any, maybe we'll just have his godparents, but his godparents do include like three future monarchs or representatives from multiple different countries. So that would be essentially just a bunch of foreign royals attending. Or are they not going to go at all, even though they're good friends with him? That seems weird. Will there be tiaras at this gala or not? The fact that they are inviting lots of people who are not royal suggests maybe there won't be tiaras and I'll be very disappointed. Will there be any interviews? Will Christian get the Order of the Elephant when he turns 18? There's loads of things that I don't know, and it's fine that I don't know them just now. But it just, I don't know, I do feel like I'm waiting for them to announce something else.
Yeah, I think, there was almost like Margrethe was the heir, sort of from a very young age, and Frederick was the heir from, baby, pretty much. And it's not like Denmark's never had an heir to an heir before, and it's not like he's the only one out there because a lot of the royals are heirs to, royal heirs are heirs to heirs at the moment, like, William and not William, like George and Estelle and Ingrid and all of them. But I think it's almost like Denmark are like, okay, so this is what we do for our heirs. So we don't do anything for the little heirs. And kind of forgetting that it's just because Margrethe is like the longest lived, longest reigning monarch at the moment. She just happens to be the old one. So they have an adult heir and an adult heir of an heir. And they still need something special too. I want some tiaras, guys. Come on.
Well, I think this is the thing is like, and this might be just because of who I pay attention to, but I genuinely don't think it is because I'm usually aware of what's going on with like the Danish royals and things outside of what I blog about or post about or whatever. I'm usually aware of things. And I feel like Christian is the heir to the throne who, except for maybe like Jacques, who's tiny. He's the heir to the throne of his sort of generation who I know the least about. Like I know quite a lot about Ingrid. I know about Elizabeth. I know about Amalia. I obviously know a lot about Victoria, but even know a lot about Estelle. But I feel like I don't really know much about Christian. Everything I assume that I know about him is just because I think it's just me projecting things from his parents. I kind of know what his voice sounds like, but I feel like I haven't heard it for a while since he gave some interviews as part of stuff that his parents do. So I feel like he's the one who, and he's the only boy in a generation of a lot of girls. So I kind of, he gets left out a lot by me. I'm complaining as if I'm not doing it, but I am the one doing it. He gets left out a lot. I don't know that much about him. And so it would be a good opportunity to kind of introduce him to us by having him speak and give a speech and maybe do an interview. And those things might come just because they haven't been announced now doesn't mean that they're not going to happen at all. But yeah, I just think it would be a shame if it was just a gala and just him doing the constitution because the 18th birthday we've seen from his peers can be a really good way to learn about somebody and be introduced to somebody's and what they find important and what their values are.
Yeah, I think, and this is in no way Christian's fault, but I also think a lot of the kind of general understanding of him is almost it's fairly neutral, and I think for young royals it tends to err on the side of positive, and it's like, oh, look at them, they're young. But I think whether it's some of it is because he's a boy and he's got a younger sister who Isabella and Josephine are both very kind of sort of flamboyant and dramatic, and he's obviously a lot of his peers are very charismatic young women. But also I think and I don't think this is remotely Christian's fault, but with things like he had that, not he personally, but there was an issue with his old school, and his parents took a while to sort of swap his school, and it kind of was like there was almost like, but Christian's like in his name was always mentioned because it was him and his school, even though he's not in charge of where he goes to school because he's a child. And it's, I'm not sitting there like, oh, I don't like Christian, but I feel like going into the kind of adult world, this is a brilliant time for him to be like, oh, I'm Christian and my favorite thing to do is knit socks or something. Like, what's who, give me
Something
something.
surprising. Like it doesn't have to be, tell me your deepest, darkest secret. It can be just like, I mean, Ingrid Alexandra, one of my favourite moments of her interview, because I feel like it told us a lot while still being very light and fluffy, was when she was asked her favourite princess, like fictional princess, and she said Princess Fiona from Shrek. And I was like, that's amazing, because everyone would be like Cinderella or Snow White or whoever and do the traditional Disney princess, and she chose Princess Fiona. And so to me, not only did that say a lot about like her character and what she's interested in, but it also, you know, it kind of, it was a fun, sweet, memorable moment without, you know, she wasn't telling us a deep, dark secret. You know, what's been announced so far is fine, but I would consider it like the bare minimum for an 18th birthday now. It's probably, you know, it sounds pretty similar, possibly even grander than what his father did. I don't think there was any of the sort of young people being invited. It was pretty much a gala and the constitution reading for Frederick as well. But I think he got like a coin, you know.
Yeah, he's not even got a coin, guys.
No, got a coin. Where's his stamp?
These are key royal things, coins and stamps.
So yeah, we'll see. Hopefully it's a developing story and we'll get some more information, and it will be a bit more than just, you know, people I don't care about not wearing tiaras.
So for our final light bite, we are heading to Britain, as we always do, inevitably, in every episode, because they have once again announced something that is somewhat interesting, which was the recent redistribution of military titles and honorary positions that they kind of randomly did on a Thursday or something this year. And obviously I have no idea what any of these roles mean, but it was interesting because it's kind of been the biggest redistribution of anything since we started to need to do a massive redistribution, because we had multiple royals die and leave in a very short period of time.
Yes. So I started typing out everybody's new positions in my notes, and then I realized that about half of a page would be taken up just with listing all of those, and I also don't think that's that interesting, to be honest. As you say, I don't know what any of these things mean, so I will mention a couple of specific ones, but if I will post a link to the full list if somebody is really, really desperate to see every single military appointment and who it went to in the exact press release. But if it's okay with you, I'm not going to read them all out.
Yeah, we'll cope.
We'll cope. Just going to say this, and again, you can go and listen to episode 59, which is the one where we talked extensively about the connections between the royals and the military. Whenever something like this is announced, part of my brain is like, you're a pacifist, war is terrible, and the royals participate in the glorification of the military industrial complex, and you don't like that, and blah, blah, blah. And then the other part of me is like, yes, but women in uniform are very attractive. And those are two very powerful arguments, Jessica. But as you say, it's not exactly a shock, really, that this has had to happen, because there have been a lot of changes recently with the Queen and Philip dying, Harry and Andrew leaving, which has meant that positions are vacant and have been vacant for a while. So it wasn't, even though it leaves me with some internal turmoil, it wasn't exactly a shocking announcement.
Yeah, I think, you know, in a almost bizarre circumstance, the four royals that left were also like the four military royals. Yeah. They're like, all of them gone at once. Like, oh, this is why we don't give everyone the same type of the role. Causes issues when we all leave them all at once. But
they seem to have made an effort to link positions to certain people who it makes sense to have those positions. So we've heard stories, and this is more about patronages than military appointments, so it's slightly different. But we have heard from, like, Prince Andrew, I think, said this, that when the Queen Mother died, they wrote her patronages on cards and put them out on a table, and everyone just picked the ones that they were interested in, and then what was left over, they just split up randomly. And it does feel like the era of doing that has ended. They at least tried to make some of the positions make sense. So there's some, like, William got RAF Valley, where he served as a search and rescue pilot. So, like, he has a connection to that area. The Duke of Gloucester was made Colonel in Chief of the Royal Auxiliary Air Force, and he's been their patron since 2012. The Duchess of Gloucester got Colonel in Chief of, I don't know what even know what this means, but Adjutant General's Corps. What's an adjutant?
I don't know. I was reading that. I was like, is this a place? Is it like a not a real military, like pretend military? I don't know. Someone in the adjutant corps, let us know, please.
Yeah, if there's any listeners, coincidentally. And she was deputy colonel in chief for over 30 years. So I do think that where they could, they tried to go, okay, well, does anybody have a pre-existing connection to this particular position that we could, utilize? We could sort of make it make sense. Some of them, on the other hand, did seem slightly forced because they'd set the precedent that they were trying to link people to their positions that they'd got. So then they kind of had to do it for everybody. So then for Kate, it was like her grandfather was in the RAF. It's like, okay, she wasn't.
Yeah, Kate's not part of this.
That's a very thin, tenuous link as to why she should get certain positions, because her grand, lots of people's grandfathers were in the military. And then I think with Camilla, they didn't even bother trying to connect her to anything. They were just like, she's getting this one.
Yeah, they were like, you remember that appointment we gave for ages ago? That was because of her dad. I was like, that's irrelevant to this conversation, guys. Would you please give out information at the right time?
Exactly. Why is she getting this one? She's like the royal chaplain, something or other. Why is she getting this particular one? Because that's not connected to her father, so you can't use that excuse again. And I think something else I thought was interesting. I'm not that concerned about the, I'm not, I don't really love the military's connection to the royal family and all that. So I wasn't sort of sitting like, oh, I hope that this person gets this military position or whatever. But there is a general concern about the fact that there are a ton of vacancies from all of these changes that have happened in the last few years that haven't really been addressed. Philip retired quite a long time ago now, and they handed out a few of his positions, but not all of them. And then the Queen, and then Harry, and then Andrew, that's a lot of people. But and so when it came out that they'd announced it, over 20 new military positions in one go, I thought, oh, that's they're really on the ball about it. They're getting action, they're taking action to fill these vacancies, they're being proactive, blah blah blah. But then I looked at the list more closely, did a very Grace thing, and I found that about a third of the positions, if you look at them, were previously held by William or Charles. Or they were like the Duchess of Gloucester thing, where she was already deputy colonel in chief, so she kind of it wasn't like a new position as such. Somebody was already connected to it, and so they weren't actually vacant at all. About a third of the positions that were awarded weren't vacancies at all. It seems like what's happened is the bulk of the late Queen's appointments went to Charles, so then he's given some of his to William. And then William's been giving some of his to Kate, and it's just been kind of like trickling down. And I mean, I don't know much about the military, so maybe there is some big reason. And I understand with things like the Irish Guards why that went from William to Kate. But I don't, there are some things where I'm like, why couldn't William and Charles have just kept this? And then they added more. So they were actually were filling the vacancies rather than just reshuffling and not actually addressing the issue.
Yeah, it was really weird because I went through all of Charles's appointments and I because like oh they're all from the Queen. It's like that makes a lot of sense. And then I went to Camilla and I was like, okay, that's from the Queen as well. I see where we're going. And then I got to William and it was like, okay, and two of them are from Charles. I was like, why? What? And also on some, it was one of the websites. I think it might have been the RAF Valley website. They've got this whole thing about how the His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales with loads of pictures of Charles. Open something and it's all like pro Charles, the Prince of Wales. And I was like, okay, so you still do have the Prince of Wales, but it's a different person now. And all of this wrong.
Haven't updated the website yet.
And I was just like, but if Charles does so much, because he clearly was engaged with them, he clearly was part of this. I was like, why is he not like, why are we not keeping him if he does stuff for you, if he's a good Royal Honorary Air Commodore, whatever that is.
Yeah, don't really. You could say that, maybe Charles has too much on his plate, and so that's why they're out and out giving things to William, and then but then they wouldn't be adding loads of stuff onto Charles. Like he got tons of new things. So it's clearly not the case that he had too much and he has to hand out some to other people. And so yeah, it's just it's it actually it might look on first glance like it is addressing the issue of these vacancies that are piling up for royal appointments, but actually it isn't really doing that when you look at it in a bit more depth. And I don't understand the logic of why Charles and William in particular couldn't have kept some of the positions that they had.
Yeah, and the fact that Anne only knew position was like the deputy of something Charles got. And then I went and looked at these, because it's the Royal Regiments, the Royal Regiment of Scotland, and I went and looked at it in more detail. And Charles is like the chief of the overall Royal Regiment, and Anne's now the deputy. And then there's eight regiments, and two of them are Charles, and one of them is Anne, and there's like five vacant.
Yeah, so why didn't she get one of those?
Yeah, why did you make her the deputy colonel? Why not give her like colonel chief of all the others? Because
Yeah.
they were like, yeah, because Anne really likes Scotland, so we're giving her this.
So not any of the Scottish vacancies, but just, yeah, I don't understand the deputy thing either, of like, you don't have enough people to be able to afford to be given deputy positions out, mate. Like, just,
Yeah, we are a bit desperate here, guys. Stop
yeah.
handing out spare positions, man, not the key ones.
Yeah. Moving on to another observation that's sort of connected, but you know, they still, even with this new allocation, there's still ultimately a ton of positions that are left over. And you know, if you consider the fact that what I mentioned a minute ago, the fact that actually what feels like filling a lot of vacancies is actually filling a lot less vacancies than it think than it feels like it is, then you also consider the fact that you know they've already got all of these vacancies that haven't been awarded, and the Duke of Kent is probably going to retire or die at some point in the future. Princess Alexandra is going to retire or die at some point in the near future as well. And to mention the fact that they haven't even touched the New Zealand, Canadian, Australian positions that all of the other royals have previously had that haven't been awarded out yet. I kind of feel like they just, you know, this is still really an issue. This new appointment seems very glossy and lovely that they've given out 20 new military positions, but the problem is still there. There's still a huge number. And I was looking at it, and I think Anne currently has about 20 military positions. Camilla has 12, Sophie has 8, and Kate has 6. They're going to have to keep giving out more, and more of them are going to have to go to Kate because, you know, Anne already has 20, and Camilla even has 12. You know, I think we are going to have to see more of these appointments being handed out in the future, but it does just highlight, I think, that they are really thin on the ground, which is not a new fact. We already knew that there's not that many British royals anymore, but you know, it just, I think to me, in a way, it was felt like it was trying to say we're handing out all of these positions to fill the vacancies, but to me, it actually just highlighted that there are lots of vacancies and not enough people to fill them.
Yeah, I almost imagine that when we start seeing royal tours again, when royals go to places like New Zealand, they're
Yeah,
gonna suddenly be
pick
like,
stuff up.
while you're here, take on these features because we need someone to do it. I know that, you know, within the military, a lot of the royal honorary roles are actually held by sort of ex-servicemen, but I almost feel like the royals need to make a bigger deal of that and be like, we have given the, I don't know, the colonel in chief of the Royal Engineers to Commodore Tim Jones, who was once in the Royal Engineers, and we're going to work really closely with him because then it takes the pressure off, but also you're giving it to someone from the military, so you're going to appease the military people.
Exactly. Yeah. They've said that there's a review going on of patronages and appointments. So we can assume that this is going to be something that is going to last a little while. But ultimately, Charles is not getting any younger. And I think that they need to announce all of these before he dies.
You need to hurry up a bit. Come on.
Yeah, I mean he seems to be in good health, and you know I don't expect him to die. Well, I said this last time, and that didn't go very well. They did immediately die, so I should probably just shut up. But you know, I think that there is the risk that like you want things to have been allocated out, connections to start being built, things to start feeling stable, before Charles has to start his transitionary period towards handing over to William, and because the Queen spent like a decade handing things over gradually to Charles and preparing people mentally for the shift.
And the fact that so many of the working royals are quite old,
Yes.
like at some point you're gonna have to stop giving new positions to Charles and Camilla and Anne and the Gloucesters because they're old. And you know, I know Edward and Sophie are younger, but they're still in their 50s. And I think, like, in you know, 20 years when William is 60. And, you know, Charles is probably going to be dying at 95 or however old he'll be then. And, you know, George is only going to be 30. Like, at William's age, he didn't have that many military patronages.
No.
But is it going to be that, like, William and Kate and maybe Edward and Sophie have 1,000 military patronages each, and George has got, like, two, or is George going to hit 18? And they're like, and George is having 473 patronages because we really need to get them handed out, guys. So, I'm ready.
To me, I mean, I've always thought this was going to be the case anyway, but to me, this statement actually weirdly made me really convinced that George and that Louis and Charlotte have to be working royals. They have no choice.
They're really desperate, guys.
Yeah, like they cannot do this without them. We've been hearing for a while that all of these older royals are going to retire, and of course the whole famous nonsense about Charles wanting to slim down the monarchy that people have been saying for years and years and years. What I think is interesting is that positions went to the Duke and Duchess of Gloucester, new positions. They were things they already had connections with, but they are new positions. And so for a long time, people had been kind of saying that they were part of the block that was going to retire, or was going to be phased out, because they're so much more distant from Charles compared to his siblings and child. And so, you know, they wouldn't have expected them to get new military positions. But I think them getting those has made it very clear that no, for the foreseeable future, at least, they are still going to be working royals.
It's always nice when, like, the press are wrong.
Yeah. I did have one last talking point, which is not actually, it's not mine. It's just responding to what the biggest conversation really I have seen about this stuff is, which is amongst sort of the press and the fandom. Biggest talking point seems to be that this military announcement is a middle finger to Prince Harry and Prince Andrew. And isn't it appalling that Prince Harry, and in some cases Prince Andrew, because apparently he still has supporters, but less so than Harry, who actually served in the military and went to a war, they lost their positions in the military to William and Kate, who didn't go abroad and serve and fight and all these things. And isn't that terrible that they're taking away? And it's a obvious signal to them they're not wanted, and all these kinds of things that people are making a big fuss about. All nonsense. Just going to say that now. This is my pitch to be hired as a royal expert, because apparently you can just say whatever you want and you get paid for it. Bottom line is, it's a job. It's my catchphrase. Being a royal is a job. Harry quit and moved abroad. Andrew was fired. And if somebody quits a job or is fired from the job, then you hire a replacement. That is how jobs work. It's just a job. It's just a practical decision. It's not some sort of personal slight at Prince Harry and Prince Andrew. So it's just that they finally have only got around now to announcing these things. And the fact that they handled it in a way that, like, I felt like they were deliberately trying to avoid drawing attention to the fact that these things used to be Harry's and Andrew's. So, like, they could have embarrassed them at being like, since Prince Harry quit the UK and threw his military patronages in the bin, we've decided to give it to somebody who actually will do a good job and actually cares and won't run away to a, you know, they could have done that, but they didn't.
Yeah, I remember when Harry and Meghan first stepped down, and there were so many bizarre rumours going around, and I spent like a solid year being like, they've quit their job, so they don't get the job perks. Like, that's what it is. In one way, I do enjoy it, but it is really frustrating that it comes up every 3 or 4 months that, like, Harry and Andrew are being punished, and Harry more so. Like, no one's punishing Andrew, but they're definitely punishing Harry for quitting his job. And it's like, well, yeah, if you quit your job in the middle of a project and you leave everyone in the lurch, your friends are going to sort of insult you behind your back. They're going to have a group chat and your group name is going to be dirt in it. Like, that is what happens. So I, you know, even if it was, even if they had, you know, released a statement like, yeah, Harry gave up, so we're giving this to proper people who actually care about people now, I would have been like, you know what, fair enough. I would be petty enough to write that press statement. It's that kind of, you know, they, you know, William and Kate have never served abroad. Like, Anne gets a pass for never doing any royal work ever, any military work. And it's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to go to every other royal family and pick out the ones that have served in the military, because it's not that many of them.
None of these people are qualified for 90% of what their job is. Like, William is not qualified to be a global campaigner for climate change. He has no, you know, I mean, he did a geography degree. I don't think that really qualifies. So did a lot of people. So I don't think that really qualifies him to be a global voice, a leading voice in the climate changing. What he has is a position and a passion. That's some nice alliteration I didn't plan, but there you go. And that's the case for the vast majority of things that they do, because they're patrons. So they're just sort of There to promote the work of things and, you know, to sort of make people feel recognised and listened to and to raise awareness of certain issues and all that sort of stuff. And so it's the same with the military. They're there to support. And, you know, it's great if they have a connection to them. And we talked about that in our military episode. But it is just sort of being the face of a particular group or going along to their fundraisers that they do and getting some press attention for them. That's all that it is. But also, I think William did serve. He might not. I think it's really strange to see particularly left-wing progressive people say that military service is only valid if you went abroad and killed people. It's very topsy-turvy to me to see sort of traditional monarchists saying that serving in the military doesn't really matter all that much, and then see left-wing progressives saying that somebody is better because they went abroad and killed people. Like, it's a very topsy-turvy world that this whole situation creates. It's really interesting because the narrative always used to be Edward. And, you know, people were like, oh, well, Anne was a girl, so she would have served in the military if she hadn't been a girl. So we'll be fine with her doing stuff. Whereas with Edward, everyone was like, well, he tried the Marines and he flunked out because he was too soft. And now he goes into the theatre. So, you know, he's a pansy kind of thing. So he used to get all the criticism when he would wear his military uniform, and it was mostly concentrated on him. But what I think is interesting is that now it is the vast majority of it is about William and Kate. And in some cases, that might be because they were the ones who got the positions from Harry and Andrew. But it just is, it is weird to me that Edward doesn't get as much anymore. Or like the Duke of Gloucester. He didn't serve. He was an architect.
He's an architect.
Nobody has mentioned the fact that he got a new military position that he is in no way qualified. I haven't seen a single person mention the Duke of Gloucester in this. It's just an excuse to create a narrative of Harry and Meghan versus William and Kate. I think everybody is just arguing nonsense because they want to create this narrative of a rivalry between them more than there already is. And I'm really tired of it and I want it to go away.
Yeah. And it's like, when you do this, when you create your little rivalry with this argument, you're the person who benefits the most from it, oddly, is Andrew. He's the most military of all the royals.
Yeah. He lost the ability to sweat in the Falklands. He's that dedicated.
Real thing, you know, apart from maybe Philip, he is up there. And if you're going, no, these have to go to, like, if you have to give it to one, give it to the soldier royal. It's like, that's not Harry, that's Andrew, guys. Stop trying to rehabilitate Andrew accidentally.
Yeah, exactly. So we hope that you enjoyed our episode this week. You know, it's still summer, so we still don't really know exactly when we're going to be back. It probably depends on what's going on, whether or not my laptop breaks again. fingers crossed it doesn't, because I will throw myself out of a window. Please do rate us 5 stars. We would really, really appreciate it. But other than that, it is a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.